Welcome to today's edition of Faith Working, a ministry to spread the Word of God generously to all who have ears to hear. I'm Casey Christopher, your host for the next half hour, and I want to welcome you to this episode of Faith Working Radio. Today's broadcast continues a recent series of programs on the intersection of current events and our historic Christian faith. We're calling it An Urgent Call to Christians in America. As we are living now in the wake of a major decision by the United States Supreme Court regarding the so-called Affordable Care Act, more commonly known as Obamacare, we have a new milepost helping us to measure our nation's culture and trajectory. The decision was a shock to political conservatives who expected the judicial appointments of the recent Republican presidents to rule the legislation unconstitutional. There are times when having a pastor who is a former assistant United States attorney can be helpful. Alan Burrow, pastor of the King's Congregation, knows about judicial history, about legal arguments, and about the way culture enters into the governing mechanisms. We asked him to share from his unique perspective about the recent Supreme Court decision and how it both comes from and leads to the shifting faith and culture in which we find ourselves as Americans.
In Luke 6, Jesus gives the famous parable about the two houses. One collapses under the storm. The other one stands up under the storm. Notice both houses are under the storm. And that's something we need to get as Christians, is that Christ's house is just as much under the storm as the unbelieving house. And it's only the storm that reveals the two houses for what they are. When the weather is sunny and there's no wind, both of them seem to be equally strong, or the other one may even seem to be better. It may be a fancier house. When the storm comes, that's when you see the difference between the two houses, and it always comes down to the foundation. And one of the things that, one of the main points of Hebrews 12 and 13 is that Jesus is Lord of the storm. In other words, he's not just the one who builds the house on the proper foundation. He's the one who sends the storm so that the house built on him and his word is shown to be the only true house that one can have, whether it's an individual, a family, a business, or an entire nation. It's the only thing that'll stand up. And when a house collapses, according to Jesus, it's always for one reason: foundation gave way. And so there may be all kinds of other problems in the house, things that the roof may leak, it needs to be fixed, and those are legitimate problems. But if the foundation is being eroded, which is what's been happening in our culture now for quite some time, yes, fix the roof. We don't want it raining on the kids. You know, we don't want the big cracks in the drywall. Let's fix those. But if that's all we're doing, then we're just majoring in the minors. If we got big cracks running through the concrete in the basement, there's not going to be any end to our problems with the roof and the drywall and plumbing and the electrical. It's going to be endless. So working on the other aspects of the house, which is what we're doing with politics and economics, we need to do it. We need to work with unbelievers, be willing to work with them to fix the leaks and so forth. But we need to understand we're just buying time. We've got to be pouring a new foundation, and that's something only Christians can do. And that's where it's so vitally important that Christians get that the Constitution is not the foundation of America. The foundation of America is the faith that produced the culture that produced the Constitution. And when you remove that faith over time, the culture is going to go. The cultural values and the worldview is going to go. It's inevitable. And once that culture goes, that Constitution is going to go. Now, I don't mean that it's going to be replaced or that there's going to be an out-and-out military revolution, but I mean that every governmental document like that is, as a matter of historical fact, going to be interpreted according to the cultural lens that's prevalent at the day. And we can see just from the Supreme Court ruling yesterday on Obamacare how this works. I mean, the ruling that we got yesterday was something that nobody expected. It shocked people across the political spectrum. It certainly shocked conservatives and culture warriors. The whole debate going up to the opinion was, where is Justice Kennedy going to vote? He has typically been the swing vote in many cases over the years between four more left-leaning justices who lead more towards central power and those kind of things, and then the four conservative justices. So the whole debate was about, where's Justice Kennedy going to vote? And the speculation was that the court at least is going to strike down the individual mandate, which requires all Americans to buy health insurance or face a penalty. Nobody expected what we got, which is that the swing vote turned out to be Chief Justice Roberts, who has up to this point been considered squarely in the conservative wing of the court. And how he did it, how he upheld Obamacare and the individual mandate was also something that was completely unexpected. He held that it was unconstitutional under the Commerce Clause, which historically has been the main clause or avenue that the government has used to intrude more and more and to regulate more and more of our lives as citizens. He held that it was unconstitutional under the Commerce Clause because not buying insurance is not commerce. That's not an economic activity that you're regulating. You're regulating non-activity. You're punishing non-activity. And he rightly noted that to allow the government to do that would bring about a relationship between the central government and the decision and the citizens that was in no way envisioned by the founding fathers, and would provide, really throw open Pandora's box to really the government being able, the central government being able to require citizens to do anything because they can regulate non-economic activity. But then he upheld it under the taxing authority clause of the Constitution, even though the president and all of, the Speaker Pelosi, Majority Leader of the Senate, Reid, all said up and down that this is not a tax, this is not a tax, even though the bill itself calls it a penalty. The individual mandate is a penalty. If you don't buy health insurance, you pay a penalty. In spite of all that, Justice Roberts said that it is a tax, and therefore it is constitutional. And so we run into a number of strange questions and really head-scratchers. The first of all is this. The first thing that the court had to deal with was the Anti-Injunction Act, which is this old act that hasn't been used in many years. But basically what it says is that when you're dealing with tax legislation, new tax legislation, you cannot attack the constitutionality of the tax legislation before it has been fully implemented. You can't come in and basically seek to enjoin the implementation of the tax, the new tax. You have to wait until it's implemented and people are actually being taxed before it's ripe and before the court can consider it. So that's the first thing that the court had to take up is, does the Anti-Injunction Act apply to the individual mandate in the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare? And Justice Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts, led the majority in saying, no, this does not apply. Well, in order to say that the Anti-Injunction Act did not apply, he had to find that it was not a tax. Because if it is a tax, then the Anti-Injunction Act will preclude the court from considering the matter. So he had to find that it was not a tax, it was a penalty. And he found, most significant, it was basically, well, what does the Act call it? The Act calls it a penalty. It doesn't call it a tax. So he had to do that so the court would rule on it. And having done that, then he had to turn right around and basically go around the world to find that even though it was not a tax but a penalty for the Anti-Injunction Act purposes, now under the tax and spend clause of the Constitution, this, even though it declared itself to be a penalty, it was a tax. And he upheld it as a tax. And another strange thing about it is that even though the court historically has upheld a lot of things under the tax and spend power, Congress does have a lot of power to tax, the court has never in its history held something to be a tax when it applies to an inactivity. So, you know, one of the things Roberts pointed out is that you can't regulate inactivity. That's not regulating commerce. Well, but you're taxing an inactivity. You're not taxing somebody for making a certain amount of income, for owning property, for being a citizen. You're not taxing somebody for those affirmative things. You're taxing somebody here for failing to buy health insurance. So this is the first time in the history of the court that something has been held to be a tax when it taxes because you fail to do something. That's kind of the classic definition of a penalty. We're requiring you to do X. If you don't do X, then we're going to make you pay this amount of money. Now, you know, a rose by any other name, you know, Shakespeare, Tallis, I mean, we all know that's a penalty. That's not a tax, because what are you taxing? Nothing. So all of the reasoning which Justice Roberts used to justify holding this unconstitutional under the Commerce Clause really applied equally to the Tax Clause. And you have to wonder what was driving this very, very smart justice to go through all these gyrations and to go this far around the world in order to say that they could rule on this and to, in fact, uphold it. And so everybody's scratching their heads. Of course, the progressives who want to see larger and larger central government and more central government control, they like the vision of society that is being sold by the Obama administration. They like that vision. They like that kind of European social vision of society. And so they're very happy with the opinion. But one of the things that's really important for us as Christians, even as we look at this politically, and as it settles in on us that if you don't like where this is going, in other words, not just a matter of do you like Obamacare, but do you like where this is taking us? Because many, I think, have rightly seen this, that this is the tipping point. If we tip further in towards state central statism and control of society through this legislation, there won't be any coming back. And I don't really disagree with that. I think there was something very telling that Margaret Thatcher shared with Ronald Reagan. They were contemporaries and they were friends. They were both conservatives, both trying to do a lot of the same things. And after they had served their terms, Thatcher shared with Reagan that she wasn't able to accomplish as much as she wanted, and she wasn't able to accomplish as much as he had done. And here's the reason why. She said it was because of the national health care system in Great Britain. Because she said the national health care system created such a huge block of special interest voters. You have all the bureaucrats who are working in the system to run the system. You have all the patients who are below the tax line, who don't pay any taxes, who are essentially receiving then free health care off other citizens. That created such a huge block of single issue voters that it was impossible to ever go back in England. And, you know, it's very possible that that's what could happen if this bill ends up standing. And now, culture warriors now realize that the Supreme Court's not going to take care of this. It's only going to be taken care of at the ballot box and by getting out and voting. And as I have before, I encourage Christians to be fully engaged, to be praying, to be involved politically, certainly to get out there and vote, but to do whatever is possible. But having said all that, it is vitally important that Christians keep their eye on the ball. And the ball, the real ball, is not the political ball. The real ball is the fact that what we need is a sea change. Why is it that we are commonly shocked and dismayed that a justice appointed by a relatively conservative president gets on the court and turns out to be something very different than what they seem to be over time? Why is that surprise always in the direction of the left? Why is it always a surprise in the direction of more central government power, intrusion, and control? We're never surprised that a justice turns out to be a whole lot more conservative and strict constructionist of the Constitution. That, you know, we can go through the history of Republican appointees, you know, Earl Warren, Blackmun, Souter, and now Chief Justice Roberts. You know, that points out this cultural, this sea trend. The sea is flowing to the left politically and downward morally. And all we've accomplished from time to time is slow that down a little bit. Slow it down a little bit. We haven't come close to really bringing about a sea change. Here's the important thing for Christians to keep in mind as we engage in the culture war. A sea change only comes about when the faith enters back into a culture and transforms that culture. As I've said before, our real foundation is not the Constitution, it's the faith that produced the culture that produced the Constitution. And once you take that faith away, the culture is going to go. And once the culture goes, that Constitution becomes paper and ink, as we saw yesterday. How much protection did the Constitution give you against further intrusion of government power? None. And I'm not saying, I believe in the Constitution. It's a great document, and I think it's possible to understand what the framers meant. It's very possible to understand that, and we ought to give implement what their original intent was. And if we want to change something, we ought to do it legitimately, which is by a constitutional amendment. What I'm saying, though, is we live in a fallen world, and as a matter of history, culture will shape the way we do everything. Once you change the culture, that document will be interpreted over time in accordance to the new cultural assumptions and worldview. And if, you know, yesterday was a perfect example of that. And there's no, you know, Christians who think we can get back to the Constitution without transforming this country, and Christians who think we can transform the culture without returning to the vibrancy of the faith that produced it, we're just kidding ourselves. And more important than that, when we think that we can just handle this as a constitutional matter, as a political matter, as a culture matter, we're really buying off on the secular idolatry that is rampant in our culture today. We're really, they believe that a culture can just hang in thin air. It can just hang in thin air, you know, and we can be our own God, essentially. We can just create our own ultimate values, our own ultimate truth, and we can make it all work, and we can have blessing and prosperity and all that kind of stuff, and we're just going to hang in thin air. When we as Christians implicitly act in such a way that says, you're right, and so the fundamental issues are here are political or even constitutional, you know, we're really adding our amen to their secularist, idolatrous assumptions. And we need to wake up to the fact that Jesus really doesn't like that. He does not like it when his people implicitly, somehow, tacitly, at some level, affirm the surrounding idolatry. That would be a real good reason why he would not be pleased to show his power through us. And we have got to keep our eye on the ball. We have to have a massive revival, a conversion of tens of millions of Americans to Christ. or we will not see the kind of sea change that will be the only thing that will turn our country around. And it always starts with God's own people. It already starts with the Christians, always. And what it means is we have to become the people with whom Christ is pleased to show his power. That's how revival starts. It starts by the power of Christ and the presence of Christ being seen in us, in our body life in local churches, in our families, in our marriages, in our children. It starts by the power of Christ being seen as we share the gospel and witness, and the power of Christ being seen through us then culturally to shape the culture. I'm not saying that things are going to fall off the cliff tomorrow or in 10 years or 20 years or 50 years. For all we know, we could get some kind of great president soon. We could have some good laws passed. We could have some good Supreme Court justices appointed, and the economy may just go great guns for 20 years and everything's great for 20 years. But ask yourself, when you look at the big picture, when you look at the trend really of the last century, do you really think that that's going to turn things around? The trend is clearly set. Things may be great for 15 or 20 years. I'm not saying they're not going to be. It doesn't look like that, but maybe they will be. We have to have a sea change to really reverse the trend. And that's where Christians have to understand we're the only one who can inject faith into this country. And it's faith always that is foundational. We have to start pouring concrete. We're the only ones who can do it because we are Christ's people. But we have to make that, in addition to our culture war efforts and our political efforts, we have to return to this kind of way of seeing things, understanding that faith is always foundational, and we have to seek a great revival in the church that Christ will cause to spill over to our whole culture.
I think it's remarkable how the lever for making a change in the world is just not where we presume to think that it is. We want to work in the political arena, we want to work in the economic arena, we want to work in the educational arena, and yet what I hear you saying is that while that's good work and that ought to continue, that's really not the foundation, that's really not the place where God looks at his church and says, yeah, that's the people, that's the group that I really want to work through, and I'm going to take this generation, and I'm going to glorify myself through this group of people, and I'm going to show the world what a real blessing is like. Does that seem to correlate to what you're saying?
The foundation of a nation is not laid by the government, but by the basic building blocks of a nation, and that's families and churches. So we can't lay a new foundation in Washington, D.C. That's where we patch the roof. Washington, D.C. is downstream in terms of culture. It's not where you change culture. And that is one reason why we come away disappointed again and again. So patching the roof is good. We should do so and cooperate with others who don't share our faith in order to do it, but we must not be distracted from the greatest need, which is to pour concrete. That's where our greatest need, and it should be our greatest devotion as well. So we should be involved in politics. We should vote and advocate and support causes consistent with a Christian position, and even those that just slow down the cultural slide. We should be all for that. It's better to go toward the cliff at 30 miles an hour than it is at 100 miles an hour. But we should not think the government is where we're going to change the culture. Thinking that government is where culture starts is really buying off on secularist assumptions. It's really a form of agreement with our culture's secularist idolatry. So what we need really is a fundamental sea change. A culture is fundamentally changed only when its foundation is changed. That's the only time you really fundamentally change a house, when you change the foundation. The rest of it's cosmetics. And it's the same thing with a nation. And the only way to pour a new foundation for 250 million people is for God to grant a massive revival in which a majority of the people seek to build their lives on Christ's word. And revival, as I've said before, it always begins in the church. It begins with God's people turning to Christ in a new way building their lives and their families and their local churches on Christ's word in a new way. It begins with us doing this, and it creates a new foundation, a new culture, and a true life at the foundational root level, which is families and local churches. And God blesses that, because ultimately it's not about what we can do. It's about what Christ can do and what he's pleased to do. So when he blesses, that life then begins to catch on. He causes it to spill out. And it provides the proper biblical context for the gospel. It's the badge. It authenticates the gospel. And then God uses that to draw and to convert people. He's done it before in the Great Awakening back in the 1740s. God caused, you know, tens of thousands of Americans to come to Christ. I mean, it happened in Scotland, you know, after the Reformation. John Knox, who was a great reformer there, talked about the way Christ was moving and people were coming to Christ. He said it was as though men were raining out of the sky. So it's just unbelievable. Jonathan Edwards talked about the same thing in New England at the time of the Great Awakening. You know, Christ can do this. It's not a problem for him. It's not like he's got to work himself up into a sweat to bring this off. The whole question is he pleased to do it with us? Is he pleased to do it with us? And that's what we really want.
Well, we'll continue this discussion on our next episode of Faith Working Radio. Feel free to contact us and tell us you're listening or ask a question that we can answer on the air. This has been Faith Working, a ministry to spread the Word of God generously to all who have ears to hear. I'm Casey Christopher, your host, with Alan Burrow, pastor of the King's Congregation, a church in Meridian, Idaho. We invite you to join us again next week as we continue to seek God's ministry in our lives, in our families, in our churches, and in our communities through His Word. More sermons and archives of these radio programs are available at faithworking.com. Or, for more information about our church, find us online at thekingscongregation.com.